This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. 10 years after the successful launch of the Lynx Blue Line, light rail is poised for expansion. On March 16th, the Blue Line extension will take the train out to the university. But the folks at CATS hope that's just the beginning. They have already announced big plans, which include more light rail to Matthews, to Lake Norman, and to the airport, a Big Bang approach that could cost about $6 billion. The second leg of the Gold Line streetcar is underway, although that's a city operation. And there are also plans to build a new transit hub uptown to bring together the streetcar, buses, and I believe Amtrak. And there are imminent plans for buses. One is called Envision My Ride, to be rolled out later this year. A lot is on the table, a lot is at stake, and that means we have a lot to talk about this hour with CATS CEO John Lewis. Welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. If you have questions or comments of your own, you can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org. Search for WFAE on Facebook. We are broadcasting on Facebook Live this morning, and you can get to us through Twitter at Charlotte Talks as well. So it's been a long time coming, but the opening of the Blue Line extension is on tap for March 16th. That's the set date. That's set in stone. It's not going to change, right?
Not at all.
Okay. And you've been running tests for a while on this line between 7th Street and the university. In those tests, what are you looking for?
Well, we're really, those are redundancy tests. So the contractor has been running a lot of these tests over the last several months to be confident that they were ready to turn the alignment over to us. And then as a requirement of our federal funding and state safety oversight, we have to go back and redo those tests. So we are performing redundancy tests to make sure that all of the systems, all of the signals, all of the safety aspects are operating at top condition. And then we're also simulating our operating environment. We are right now running trains from 485 all the way up to the university so that we can give us an opportunity to iron out all the kinks before we go into revenue
service. That started, January 21st? You've been operating trains on a regular schedule, although no passengers go beyond 7th Street. Is that right? That's
correct. We are simulating a regular schedule and our normal operating environment. So the last passenger gets off at 7th Street, and then we continue on as if we were picking up passengers on the extension.
You stop at the stations and everything.
Stop at the stations. We dwell about 30 to 40 seconds simulating passengers getting on and off, and then we take off again.
So what does that tell you?
Well, it tells us that right now we've got an incredible system. I've been on it myself several times, and I am amazed by it. But we have a lot of boxes to check, a lot of I's to dot and T's to cross. It's amazing to me every time I look at the plans and go through the testing documentation, the number of things that we have to check off to make sure. Thousands of signals. Thousands of connections, hundreds of crossing points, and every one of them has to operate perfectly. And not just once, but perfectly each and every time. And so we have to go through about 30 days of perfect testing. And if something goes wrong, we have to fix it. And then the clock starts again.
Has anything gone wrong?
No.
Nothing. Not a thing.
Everything's been great.
Okay. Knock on for Mike.
Absolutely.
Have you had to add trains? Did you have to buy trains? Because now the line is 9.3 miles longer. That's going to increase the lag time between when you can go back and forth because it's going to be a longer route.
Absolutely. We have acquired 23 additional trains, not only for the trip length, but also for the amount of passengers that we believe. We're going to more than double the current ridership. Today, we'll move about 18,000 people on the Blue Line. We expect within the first year of operations to the university that number will be well over 40. Mm. And so the additional capacity, but also we're moving from 10-minute headways, and headways is a transit term, but the gap in time between one train and the next train. So we're going from 10 minutes to 7.5 minutes. And so in order to do that, you have to put more trains on the line.
So right now you can go from 485 in the south to 7th Street.
Soon
you'll be able to go from 485 to the university. Are you going to raise the price to go from 485 to the university?
No, the price will remain the same.
Okay. There are two videos that people can, I think ordinary people can take them because they sent me links to them and I watched them over the weekend, that you can take a virtual ride on the train from the university to downtown, and another one follows the train from the air. I guess drones followed the train from the air from 7th Street to the university. And as I watched those two videos, it occurred to me that when this expansion opens, we really have the beginnings of a light rail system. I don't know that we did before, but now we have a train that actually goes goes somewhere. Is that how you look at it, too?
Well, I think that's a very important point. So many times the discussion centers around what can you access and what can you get to and what is going on along the blue line. What we are attempting here is to create a system of mobility options. It has taken quite some time. These kind of infrastructure investments don't happen overnight, but we are trying to create a system of mobility options. The Blue Line extension is the next step in that, but the Gold Line streetcar is also an important part of that system. The Blue Line is a north-south corridor that provides great connectivity from 485 to the university to Uptown. But we have to remember, we also need east-west connectivity, and the Gold Line is the beginning of that. We will connect Plaza Midwood to the hospital, to CCCP, university, to Uptown, to Johnson & Wales and Johnson C. Smith, and connecting communities, really, east-west for the first time.
What's the target date for that to be up and
running? Well, we will be up and running in fall of 2020 with the phase two of the Gold Line.
Wow, that's not too far.
Not too far. There's a lot going on.
Are you going to open it bit by bit, block by block, or will it just go from what it is now to what it will be on one specific?
Yeah, we're going to open it as a full segment. We're working on opposite ends of the current Gold Line, so we're going from Novant Health further out into the Hawthorne neighborhood in the east, and then from the transit center out to Johnson C. Smith on the west. So we will open the entire segment at once.
And to be clear, that's being operated. Are you operating that? The city owns that operation.
Katz is operating it. The city paid for the construction and the current operations of that. But that is a part of CAT's overall system.
Okay. Getting back to the Lynx Blue Line extension, when that opens, you've already talked about an increased ridership, but do you see this changing travel patterns in Charlotte once that is open?
Well, I really believe so. I think, again, this is all about giving people choices in their mobility options. And so I think in the future, when question will be asked and I will gauge what is the success of CATS, I think when the individual who lives in this region, as we build out this system of mobility options, well, when they're thinking of going from their origin to destination, whether that's home to work or home to an evening of entertainment, that they think of CATS. Can CATS handle that trip? Now, we won't be able to handle every trip, but I want that to be a normal part of the thought process. And I think as we continue to build these alignments, that is what will occur. Mm-hmm. We're not going to solve congestion by any means. This region is growing exponentially. But what we want to make sure is that we provide people with options in their travel.
What do you think is in store for Uptown when this link to the university opens? Is this going to make a big difference for students who are in dorms and take classes at the Uptown campus and get off at 9th Street? Or is this going to make the biggest difference on the weekends when they're going to the bars? Is this going to become the bar transportation system?
I think all of the above. What transit does is sort of like what airlines have done. It really shrinks the community. It provides quick, efficient, and reliable. Right now, you can get from the university into Uptown. It may take you 30 minutes, or depending on traffic, it may take you 45 minutes. Right. What this does is it doesn't matter what day, what time of day, what the weather may be outside. It's going to be the same time today as it is 10 years from now. And so it gives certainty To travel. And I think what that does is shrink the community. So things that individuals may not consider as an option, whether that's business, whether it's education, whether that's entertainment, now becomes a part of their reality because they can get from their origin, their destination in a guaranteed amount of time.
You've ridden the train from 7th Street to the university and back. Nobody else has except the engineers, I suppose. But as you take that trip, how does it compare to the trip that people are accustomed to from 485 to 7th Street in terms of the number of grade crossings there are, number of times the crossing arms have to come down and stop traffic from crossing the tracks because the train has come, versus overpasses? And I know you have a tunnel in this new leg of the links. How does this trip compare to the previous trip?
Well, I think it's very similar. I mean, when you're coming from 485, you're coming into Uptown in a suburban kind of part of the community. You're then coming closer into the urban area, and as you get into South End and Uptown, you're more grade crossing, more intersection crossings, but we're within our own right-of-way the vast majority of that time. What is different about the extension is that we're in coming out of our own right-of-way in the for a good portion from 7th Street out to NoDa. But then we head into North Tryon. And so we're in the center of North Tryon. And I think the fun thing that I get right now, and I think that's just the novelty of it, is whenever we're on the train, on the test trains, watching the expression and reaction of the people who are driving next to it. It's really is rewarding to see the excitement of it. Now, I will suggest to people that as you're going out there, take your phones out and take pictures, but please wait till you get to a stop sign in order to do that. I have seen several people doing that, driving and taking pictures. But it is a different operating environment. Safety is a huge concern for us in that regard. Because we're going through North Tryon in the center of traffic, we're changing the traffic patterns there. So left turns and right turns are very different moving forward, and we want people to be very cognizant of that changing pattern.
This was supposed to open in August. Now it's opening in March, the middle of March. March 16th is the date. The contractor, not you, missed the deadline. Why? What was going on that caused them to be a little late on
that? Well, that was an aggressive opportunity for us. The contract deadline was always March of 2018. When you look at the contracts and our funding agreement with the Federal Transit Administration, it was March. During the as we were getting moving forward with design and laying out the schedules, our partners at the university, who have been amazing partners to CATS, and we probably wouldn't be talking about this project without the leadership at UNC Charlotte, asked us that we love you, it's a great project, we support you 100%, but it would be nice if you could open at the beginning of the school year rather than the middle of the school year. Right. And so, the team got together and really thought if we pushed hard, we could make that early opening. And as we got into the project and, building a billion-dollar, 9-mile infrastructure, there were some challenges that we had, both with the civil engineering portion of it, the dirt and the track laying and other aspects, complicated aspects of the project that just made that early opening impossible.
The good news, though, is you're coming in under budget. That rarely happens on any kind of infrastructure project. How did you do it?
Well, I love the ability to say not only are we on time, but we're also under budget. Now, the challenge of that is we don't get to keep that money. I have to send that money back to Washington. But I think it points to the unbelievable partnership that we've had, both from the CATS professionals who've been leading the project to the partnership with the design, engineering, construction firms, and just the diligence of this community to move this project forward.
John Lewis is the CEO of CATS. He'll be with us for the hour. We're going to talk more about the Lynx Blue Line extension, about other rail plans, bus plans, transit plans in general, when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. The CEO of CATS, John Lewis, is with us. The Lynx Blue Line extension to the university opens on March the 16th. When that happens, how will things change? How often does Lynx operate now, and how will that change when the line is twice as long as it is now?
Well, we're going to go from 10-minute intervals between trains to 7.5. And so there will be more frequency along the line as we're going further. I mean, we're going from a 9-mile line to over 18 miles. We're going to add more trains, add more capacity, and more frequency. So you will get more reliable service along that north-south corridor.
Still 2-car trains, not 3?
We have the, along the extension, we have the capability for 3-car trains, but we will have to go back at the appropriate time and retrofit the Blue Line stations so that they can accommodate 3-car trains. We have 4 stations now that can accommodate 3-car trains along the Blue Line, but we are using those for special events. And so next year when we have the NBA All-Star Game and Big Panther games and playoffs and et cetera, we'll be able to run 3-car trains for particular events. But right now, we don't have the daily ridership that would necessitate 3-car trains right now.
So how long will it take to go from 7th Street, which is where the thing stops right now, to the university?
We are right now, we are estimating that to be somewhere in that 23 to 28 minute range. Everything that we've done thus far has been on paper and using our formulas. We are testing that in an operating environment right now.
And you don't know that yet because you don't know the particulars of the track and how fast the train can negotiate the track. Why don't you know that?
Well, we're still in that testing phase. And so when you open an alignment, you don't go and put the pedal to the metal on the first train you go. So we started the testing at a very minimal speed. And as we continue to add testing, we're check off those boxes, we're increasing our speeds. Now, we have along the alignment what is called positive train control, where the brains of the system control can override the human driver in that. And so we haven't been able to get up to full operating speed. And so right now everything is theoretical until we can operate that consistently in a real environment.
Positive train control is the automated device that has been missing in some of these train derailments that we have been hearing about around the country. Had they had positive train control, they would not have derailed in all likelihood.
In many of those cases, you're exactly right, Mike.
So from the university to the end of the line at 485 or vice versa, how long is that trip? Do we know?
From 485
from one end
to
of the
university,
line to the other. Yeah.
We're estimating that to be about 45, 48 minutes, and we will validate that as we continue moving forward.
Okay. Your promotional literature points out a lot of benefits to light rail, including consistent travel time, which you've already talked a little bit about, additional choices, promotion of integrated land uses, which I think we have seen in the South End area, stronger neighborhoods, which I suppose could be argued in the South End area. But it will take, I think, what did you just say, from I-85 to the university, what will it take, 45 minutes?
About 45 minutes.
How does that compare to drive time? To driving it?
Well, depends on the how you try and get there. But if you're going around 485, I would imagine it would probably be twice that time, depending on time of day. Going through the city along Tryon, I've not done that, but I'm guarantee it will be much longer than what it will take on the train.
And as you said, it will always be the same.
It will always be the same. Once we lock that trip time through our testing, it's going to be the same on March 16th that it will be in 2018, and it will be in March 16th of 2030.
So, Rob emails, when a new fare boxes on buses were announced in 2016, Katz promised future enhancements, including contactless passes that can be reused. What are the plans for those?
We are still moving forward. The plan is still to move forward with contactless. I will say technology is changing so quickly that we have instead moved forward with mobile payment. Talking with our customers, it is, while contactless is out there and we would live, everyone has a cell phone. And rather than instituting another payment method where you have to get a Katz card and carry that card in a wallet, you already have your cell phone. Our Katz payment app is the easiest way of paying.
I downloaded your Katz Pass app yesterday on my phone. It's telling me I have no internet in here today, so so I can't use it. But I downloaded it yesterday and set it up, put my credit card in. So that means all I have to do to buy a ticket now is go to this app, buy it, And then what do I do with it? Is it like an airline? You show the screen to somebody?
You use it just like an airline ticket, although we have some security features in that. It is not a one-time scan like an airline ticket. You will notice that the barcode will continuously changes. That's a security function on that to keep people from taking pictures of a pass they bought a week ago.
Right.
And you will be able to ride any of our bus service. You can scan it on the fare box and on the train. We will have our random conductors who come through, and they will have scanning devices, and they will ask you for your phone, and you will be able to scan that way.
So it's, what's the trip on Lynx cost?
It's the same, $220.
$220 each way, but you can buy a one-day pass.
You can buy a day pass, a week, or a monthly pass.
You're
catching me on that. I'd have to pull out my phone and look at my Cats app.
Okay. although the Lynx stop in Noda is going to open on the 16th on 36th Street, the street that crosses the track is not going to open until June.
Right.
Why?
Well, that is whenever we do infrastructure like this, and we're going into the same thing with the Gold Line Phase 2. Once one city department goes in and does some work, we query all of our other city departments and say, look, we're going to be digging up this corridor. Is there anything else that you all would like to do that maybe we could partner on and add to the contract so we can minimize the impact to the community? So 36th Street has been CDOT's role for a good while, and with NCDOT also. And as we were building the rail portion, there were some other aspects of the roadway that had to be dealt with. And so we went in to try and do that work at the same time. The roadway is lagging behind the rail infrastructure. And so we will have rail service before we'll have street access through that.
We're going to talk about your other rail plans, but with regard to the Lynx Blue Line, do you see a day when the terminus will not be 485 and the university, that the southern leg might go,
Valentine,
Fort Mill, Rock Hill? Do you see a day when it will go further north than the university?
I think absolutely. Right now we're focused on delivering the 2030 plan, the five corridors that were originally established in 2002. But we're already having conversations about, 2030 plan point one. What happens after that? How do we get into Iredell County? How do we get to Cabarrus? How do we get out to, we've had incredible conversations with Gaston and Belmont about what happens once we get past the airport and beyond. And then Valentine is becoming a hub of activity in this region, and we are already having discussions about how we better serve that area.
Would that be the blue line, or that would be another train?
Well, it depends on what area we're looking at. If we're talking about the Ballantyne area in South, I think it would be a natural extension of the blue line.
Okay. Because, if you look at the metro in Washington, not all of those – do all of those lines connect at Metro Center? Do they all
connect
together?
No, there are some at Union Station, some at Metro Center. Yes.
So there's nothing that tells you in the Bible of light rail that you must connect all these lines to all of the other lines. You could connect like a silver line to the blue line only.
Right.
Absolutely. And then take the blue line to connect to the red line.
As a matter of fact, I don't know of any mature system that has only one central connectivity point.
Patrick on Twitter, proud our infrastructure continues to grow because rail systems usually come with more economic development. I hope those displaced also get new opportunities to benefit. Transportation can be a window to help with segregation. It's certainly a development tool and a transportation tool. Do you see it as a social engineering tool as well?
Absolutely. And I think, that's the real struggle that we have. And for me personally, when you look at the unbelievable transformation that the Blue Line has had in South End, I got here 2 years ago. I thought the South End always looked the way it does today, and apparently it did not. Almost $2 billion in new development over the last 10 years, and we're already seeing that development pattern come to fruition along the extension. Almost $500 million of new development is coming out of the ground today before we even open. And so that's the good side, the positive side of it. Unfortunately, with that new development comes higher cost of living along that corridor. And so the sort of not so shiny side of that coin is that the people who've lived there for so long can no longer afford to live in that area. And so that is really a conundrum for us in the transit world and for the city. As it is, demographic changes are coming about, and it's cold to live in urban areas again. How do we handle the displacement of people who've lived in these communities and in these neighborhoods for so long? Yeah. We are working with our partners in the city, at Department of Housing and Economic Development, elsewhere. Affordable housing is an incredibly important aspect of this. We're working on that. I would not say that we've solved that, but we're working diligently in that area.
Rebecca on Facebook has anticipated something we're going to talk about. She said, instead of a train to Matthews, which we will talk about, how about more routes, longer service times, more hubs? She's talking about buses, I would guess, around the city. What sense does it make to take a bus all the way uptown to get all the way back out to a destination? You've already begun. That's going to change very quickly.
It is. And I will tell you, our riders are absolutely brilliant in that regard. Unfortunately, sometimes it takes the rest of us a little longer to catch up to where our riders are. We have been operating an antiquated hub and spoke system for quite some time. As the demographics, as I mentioned, have changed, the commuting patterns of our riders have changed. And we force a large number of our customers to come from the outskirts of town into uptown, get off a bus, go across the platform at the transit center, get on another bus to go back out of town. That is inefficient, and it is forcing our customers to take much longer trips. Our average trip, if you have to take more than one bus, is 90 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you think about, you're spending anywhere from 3 to 4 hours a day just going from one place to another. We've got to do better than that. And we're in the process of finishing our Envision My Ride, which is the CERT study, which is redesigning our entire system to move from that hub and spoke to a more grid system. We want to disperse our transfers, minimize our transfers, but when you have to make a transfer, we'd like to disperse that further away and closer to your destination.
So you're talking about more crosstown routes, which to you, it's hard to envision this outside of New York City where we know what crosstown means, but you're talking about if you want to go from Ballantyne to Pineville, your bus would go from Ballantyne to Pineville. Right. It wouldn't come uptown.
And not into uptown.
Right.
Right, exactly. If you wanted to go from South End to Concord, you shouldn't have to come into uptown to get there.
What does that mean for the system? Does that mean you have to buy a lot of buses?
No, because what we're doing is creating, redesigning the system to be more of a grid system. Now, this is going to be an evolution because, again, that average travel time, we'd like to bring that down. So it's not just the transfers they're doing, but it's the frequency of service. And so almost half of our routes are on hourly headways. So bus number one comes at 8 a.m. in the morning. Well, the next bus doesn't come until 9 a.m. And so we'd like to bring that frequency down. So it'll be an evolution of investment in that. What is it going to cost us to make that trip 45 minutes? And what is it going to cost to make that trip 30 minutes? So this will be about a five-year plan in that
regard.
You're
not going to close the uptown transfer station.
Absolutely.
And people
not.
Still need to come uptown in some situations. So if you're going to come uptown and you're going to provide service from one suburban neighborhood to another, doesn't that automatically require more buses?
Well, it will require some, and we are making that investment. But really, what will drive the big investment in that is changing those frequencies. So to put more, for us, remember, adding more capacity means adding more vehicles, and so and adding more frequency to our service. And so again, we're taking those 40-plus routes that are on hourly service, 30-plus, that are on hourly service, and getting them to 30-minute service really means we have to double the amount of vehicles we put on that route.
Gateway Station is something else that you're talking about, and now you're just not talking about it. You're actually going to break ground on this in June, if I'm not mistaken. Gateway Station is where you're planning to build uptown, a location for the buses, for the streetcar, and for, is it Amtrak?
Yes.
To come together. Amtrak is right now out on North Tryon Street, right across from Channel 9, just about. And now you're going to bring that downtown. Why do we need this?
That's correct. Right now, that Charlotte's Amtrak station is the busiest Amtrak station in the state of North Carolina, moving several hundred thousand people each year.
And it's pretty dinky.
And right to use your word, it is pretty dinky. And particularly if you're out there when it's after a good rain, not only is it dinky, but it's flooded. And so we need to modernize that station. There's very little parking. We do serve it by transit, but North Tryon is a very busy street. And so we want to bring that service into Uptown. We believe strongly that that will enhance our Amtrak service because you bring that service closer into the destination areas. We're connecting it with the Gold Line so you can get anywhere in Uptown. And if you need to, get off the Amtrak train, get on the Gold Line, go to the Transit Center. You can get on the Blue Line and get to the university or anywhere else. So again, providing those mobility options. But it's also about creating that system. And so we want to connect Amtrak with our rail connectivity, with bus, and with other mobility.
But why not a Grand Central Station or a Penn Station kind of situation where the passenger rail and the streetcar and the Lynx Blue Line and the buses all come together at the same place?
Well, because if you're going to concentrate on one particular location, then what happens when somebody's destination isn't there? And so, again, it's the same thing we're talking about with our bus system. We created a hub and spoke where everyone had to come into Uptown.
Okay.
But now people's travel patterns have changed and their destinations have changed. And so now they don't want to come downtown. So why force people to go places where they don't want to go?
And Gateway Station will be where?
Gateway will be at Graham, right along the current Norfolk Southern tracks, just across from the baseball stadium.
Okay. How will that impede how will that change traffic flow downtown?
Well, I will tell you right now, over the next 2 years, we are going to have an incredible impact to traffic in Uptown.
You're going to be building
between the Gold Line construction on trade and the new Amtrak service. There's going to be a lot of cranes.
And I only have 10 seconds. Completion date for this would be what? Target date?
For the first phase will be 2022.
Well, we'll come back and talk about first phase. And what about us? Dennis in Mooresville, what about us? We'll talk about that, too, when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. John Lewis is our guest. He's the CEO of CATS. We're talking about transit expansion and the opening of the new Blue Line extension on March the 16th to the university and many, many other things. We just talked about Gateway Station, which you're going to begin breaking ground on in June. Phase one is what? You just alluded to the opening date of phase one. What is phase one?
Sure. Well, phase one is the infrastructure portion of that. And so it's the track work, the bridge work. We have to rebuild and expand five bridges in Uptown so that we can separate the current freight rail traffic from the additional passenger rail traffic. And so the bridge work, the signals, the rail, building 2,000 feet of rail, and the platform and canopy for passenger rail.
And the opening date of all this, where we could actually use it as a station, would be what?
Well, that's what we're working towards now. So there are two phases to the project. Right now, the infrastructure phase that I mentioned will be breaking ground this summer. At the same time, we're now starting the development, the vertical development phase. We own, along with NCDOT, the property adjacent to that track work, and we're working now to develop an RFP, bring the development community in. We'd like to get a private developer to come in and build that station along with other private development, whether it's residential, hotel, office space, retail. So we've got two phases. What we do, CATS and NCDOT, will handle the infrastructure. We want to bring the private sector in to work on the vertical development.
So it's Norfolk Southern. We're talking Amtrak.
Amtrak.
Amtrak. Yeah. So does Amtrak come into town now?
Does not come into
town.
We're bringing
into town.
New rails.
So when you do that, is it going to be at street grade, or are you going to bury it? Are you going to put it above the street?
It's going to be above. So it's above. Just right now, the freight rail is above the street level. And so that's why we have to rebuild those bridges so that we can add capacity on those bridges that will enable us to bring that passenger rail corridor in.
So, email question. How do you plan to become competitive with Uber? And this gets us to last mile partnerships. You're already thinking about Uber and about Lyft.
Absolutely. I don't see
Uber. And I
guess
taxis, right?
The transportation networking companies, the Ubers, Lyfts, and even some taxi companies, I don't see them as competition to what we're doing. I see them as an enhancement. And in areas where we can complement each other, we're working to do that. And our first and last mile pilot program is an example of that. So what happens to that individual that gets off that last station of the Blue Line extension at JW Clay and may work out at TIAA Craft, which is about a half mile away in a big corporate park? Are they going to take a bus? They're certainly not going to walk. And so, but does that mean that we should put a bus line out there? We have tried to provide bus service, but that corporate park is so large that it takes, it's still a good walk from the parking lot to the building.
Yeah.
And so what we will do is partner with Lyft, have seamless connectivity through our phone app, and then that connectivity can be done on demand rather than having a bus ride around there.
You have been accused, or Charlotte has been accused, of depending on 18th century technology for 21st century transportation needs, 18th century technology being the train. What you seem to be doing is using, if you plead guilty to 18th century technology, using 18th century technology and marrying it to 21st century technology and leaping over the 20th century. You haven't mentioned taxicabs at all.
Absolutely. What we're trying to do is take advantage. What we want to do is put the right tool for the right use and move away from our typical cookie cutter approach of every community needs a 40-foot bus. We want to provide mobility options. Again, measured success would be, can I get there using CATS? And we want to do it in the most efficient and effective means. So that individual who gets off the train, who only needs to get out to the corporate park, what a better way of doing that rather than waiting on a schedule. That Uber or Lyft or TNC will be waiting for you, will drop you off at the door, and when you're ready to come back in the afternoon, call the you'll get the reverse trip.
Okay. So Dennis in Mooresville has emailed, what about us? And he's referring to Northern Mecklenburg County. And you have proposed a rather ambitious series of other lines, rail lines, Matthews Lake Norman Airport. Is the Matthews to the airport one line, or is that two lines?
Well, we're studying that right now. Right now, it is two lines. But it is not a far-fetched to just be able to go from Matthews into Uptown and straight out to the airport. I'm kind of partial to multiple lines in that regard, but as you draw lines on the map, they're all contiguous. The challenge that we've had, these are not new. These are part of the 2030 plan. It was established back in 2002 when we decided to develop the plan and fund it with a half-cent sales tax. The half-cent sales tax was enough to fund the entire plan. And then we had the downturn in the economy.
Right.
Sometimes I like to quote that great American philosopher, Mike Tyson. Everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face for the first time. Mm-hmm. Well, we all got popped in the face with the depression. And so that threw off our financial plan. Right now, the current half-cent sales tax will fund the Blue Line extension. And then we don't have any more financial capacity at that. So what we're trying to do and what we're putting out.
Why?
We lost about $2 billion worth of capacity.
We're back.
And if we continue along to build one at a time, the 2030 plan will turn into the 2050 plan.
Okay. So originally, the 2030 plan, the line to Matthews was bus down Independence and or Monroe Road, and then the trip out to Huntersville was going to be commuter rail, which is heavier than the light rail cars,
yes,
but not quite what a train is, or a passenger train. Now you're talking about the northern part
of the county. So the corridors have remained the same, but the technology has changed. And so we're talking light rail.
Is that more expensive than taking buses down the center of Independence
Boulevard? It is, but buses give you mobility options, but what bus doesn't do is give you the economic development.
Okay.
And this is about not just about mobility. The entire 2030 plan is not just about how many people we move, but is how we change and add to enhance the quality of life of this community.
So what are you talking about to the northern part of the
country? So the northern part, right, we are studying that corridor again. We have an established corridor that was studied and agreed upon in the original plan. The challenge that we have is that we don't own that corridor. That corridor, the Red Line, is owned by Norfolk Southern Railroad.
Which you've had several difficulties with, both there and with the original Blue Line.
Well, we have to remember that Norfolk Southern is a for-profit company, corporation, and they have been great partners with us thus far, but we have to remember their number one role is to provide freight rail transportation. And it is not compatible with their business plan at the moment to share that line with passenger rail.
Okay.
So we can continue to hope and pray that that may change in the future, or we can try and take our destiny in our own hands. And so we're back out in the community having this conversation, saying, establishing, you know, the reality of Norfolk Southern's business needs, and saying, can we find another corridor that will enable us to build rapid rail serving those towns? And at this point, we don't know whether that will be commuter rail or light rail, but it will be a rail option.
Could you have taken it down the center of I-77?
We could. We can, and that is one of the options we're looking at. The challenge we have with that, though, is, again, when you're building rail down the road, you're looking solely at mobility options and not the economic development. You're not going to have the development options when the rail is buried, is between five or six lanes of 70-mile-an-hour traffic.
Okay. Now, these two lines will cost as much as $7 billion, and I'm sure that's a conservative estimate. So before I ask you where that money would come from, let me ask you how you can bring three lines in at the price of $7 billion when the 9.3-mile Blue Line extension cost $1.2 billion.
Sure. And that is back-of-the-napkin estimate. So when you look at the per-mile cost of the Blue Line extension, and that's just about $120 million a mile, and then add up the straight-line distance of the next three lines, it's somewhere in that $7 billion range. So, you know, I'd like to say somewhere between $6 and $8 billion in that regard, but it's, again, back of the napkin.
The this would require some type of tax increase. There's a couple of dirty words for you. And when President Trump talked about improving America's infrastructure during the campaign, even some tax-conscious Republicans were behind this because, in truth, we're behind the rest of the world in our infrastructure. We've kind of let it languish since the Eisenhower administration built the interstate highway system. This would be an infrastructure project. Do you see money coming from the Trump administration to help with this?
Well, the timing is perfect to have this conversation. The new infrastructure program was leaked by last week, and we are getting pieces of it. Mm-hmm. I will say, when you look at the partnership that we've had from a federal, state, and local standpoint, and how we built the Blue Line and the Blue Line extension, generally that partnership was 50% federal, 25% state, 25% local. That formula has changed. The state has now lowered its threshold to 10%. Mm-hmm. We are still looking at a local level to find ways to come up with our 25. But what is most important is that the federal government remain in that 50% range. And right now, the proposal from the administration takes that down to 20. Mm-hmm. And so the math is getting really difficult. But we'll see what comes out of Congress. And I hope that Congress will maintain the federal participation of that in that 50% range.
Retired UNC Charlotte professor, now transit consultant David Hartgen, who, if my memory serves me correctly, and it may not, I don't think is a major fan of rail. But he said we would need at least a full penny added to the sales tax, which would take our sales tax to 8.25%, our sales tax 9.25% in restaurants and bar tabs. Is the sales tax the best vehicle for this?
I don't know that one vehicle is better than the other. I think what we have to do and what we're looking to provide is diversify our funding stream. And so we will be having a conversation at City Council about value capture as one portion of that. So the economic development that takes place as a result of this investment will bring in additional revenue to the city and the county. Should not a portion of that come back to the engine that brought that development about? And so I'm a little greedy on that. I think that CAT should get 100% of that incremental revenue. I think it'll be somewhere between 0 and 100. And so we need to diversify that funding portfolio.
To put this need into some sort of perspective, instead of just the guy in Mooresville who said, what about us? And because their only way into town really is I-77 and some smaller roads, which get clogged up every morning and every afternoon. At a November meeting to talk about rail to Mooresville and the airport, CAT's transportation planner Jason Lawrence came with what I think is an eye-opening fact. In advocating for a new vision for these corridors and an update of the current plans, he said, the original plan, which was created in the 90s, estimated that 980,000 people would live in Mecklenburg County by 2025. 980,000 people by 2025. We hit that number in 2014. Wow.
That really is the telling factor in this. You know, 44 people a day are moving, new people are moving into this region each and every day. And I'd like to put that into little context. That's a full busload of people. Or for the, you know, young parents in there, that's a full classroom of young kids who are moving in each and every day and will do so for the next decade. And so how do we, if we want to maintain that high quality of life that is attracting people to come to the Charlotte area, we have got to get ahead
this
of this
congestion
issue.
This is not a choice in your mind.
It is not a choice, not if we're going to maintain the competitiveness. And I'll just add one other thing. Our competitors in this area, it's not just Raleigh and Durham. It's Atlanta. It's Orlando. It's Nashville. Nashville has just announced a very ambitious plan that they're going to ballot with in May to build 5 rail corridors in Nashville. So this is not just about the quality of life in Charlotte. This is about our economic competitiveness in this region.
There have been articles, I know this is some of this is way into the future, but there have been articles about what's going to happen when we have driverless cars, that we will no longer own our own cars. We'll simply summon them like an Uber. The car will pick us up. It'll take us where we want to go. We won't even need traffic signals except for pedestrians because the cars will talk to each other, thereby negating the need for rail and
well,
or buses.
I think that certainly from a technology standpoint, it is possible to get there. But what you can't predict is the human factor. And so all of that is possible if 99% of Americans get rid of their individual car and use that technology. How long is that going to take? I don't know.
Well,
will
it
be
2050,
10 years,
2060?
Or will it be a generation? And so you really don't get the benefit of, you know, driving 80 miles an hour, 2 inches apart, and getting that capacity until that occurs. In the meantime, you will get the congestion will still be there as you're having shared vehicles along with individually owned vehicles. And I go back to the premise. The trip from university into Uptown will remain the same on March 16th of 2018 that it will in March 16th of 2035.
We only have a minute left, but we have a question on Twitter about a spur that would go from the Blue Line either to Ballantyne or South Park or both, and she thinks it's kind of crazy that we don't have that already. What about that?
I think, you know, hindsight's 20/20. Originally, we had planned to get to Pineville, and that would have gotten us very close. But right now, we've got to look towards the future. I think Ballantyne is certainly a makes sense in that regard, and we're working very hard to get there.
John Lewis is the CEO of CATS. We have a lot of questions that I'll share with you from listeners we didn't get to here. Many of them are comments, like the horns on the trains are anemic. Thank you for the hour.
Thank you so much, Mike.